We've gotten through verse 19. Do we have questions prior to going any farther? Verse 20 in most Bibles is separated into the section prior. But the way I've split this up, I kind of grouped it with the last four verses for a reason. But verse 20, really verse 19 says, they threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth. For in one hour she is made desolate. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. And then he goes on, verse 21 and following. Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found any more. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, and trumpeters shall not be heard in you any more. No craftsman, no of any craft shall be found in you any more. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you any more. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you any more. And the voice of the bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you any more. For your merchants were the great men of the earth. For by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints, and of all who were slain on the earth. Now, I did allude to the last verse the last time we talked about this section of Scripture, but we'll get there. But verse 20 is really, it kind of dives in. It's just sort of picking up. And the reason I started with verse 19 was to just kind of give us that throwback to the destruction of the city. And what is implied in verse 19 is the people are wailing, they're upset, they're torn down, they're broken by what is taking place. Throwing ashes on yourself, ripping your clothes, that was all signs of mourning. The people are mourning, but they're not mourning because the city is destroyed. They're mourning because of the things they're losing. They're mourning over the wealth that they're losing. They're mourning over the fact that they no longer have a livelihood, that they no longer, almost similar to what we talked about this morning with Lot and his wife, where it said they lingered and they kind of waited. Like when they were leaving the house, it's like all these things they having to leave behind and they don't want to let go. It's kind of the same thing, but alas, alas, the great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in one hour she was made desolate. The ships have been destroyed. Their livelihood is gone. Verse 20 then says, to rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. Babylon persecuted Christians. The city that's here in the description is Babylon, has been persecuting. It's been tearing God's people down. It's been ripping at the seams for the church to fall apart. And what it basically says is that all activities in Babylon will cease as quickly and is totally over the next part of this. When you get into verse 21, it talks about a millstone being thrown into the water and the splash and the sinking that a millstone will do. Like when a millstone sinks, I mean, the interesting factor of it is that, you know, it's just kind of interesting to think that the millstone hits the water and how fast that it sinks into the water is practically how fast that the city was destroyed. And the verse kind of breaks sharply from this desolate mentality to this positive message. I mean, it's like a night and day between verses 19 and 20. And it concludes the words of the second speaker that began in verse 4 that we had way back, probably four times ago. I think actually I did get from verse 4 to verse 19 last time, or something close to that. But the speaker starts speaking in verse 4, that second voice that we heard. the other voice that spoke up. And the heavenly voice began with an exhortation for the earthly people of God, which is the visible church, to separate from Babylon. So verse 4, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. And it wraps up with the people crying about the city and the destruction that's taking place. And it ends with this exhortation to the heavenly people of God, which is now the invisible church, to rejoice over the destruction of the enemy. You know, you've got the visible church, and then the separation of that church from Babylon, from the city, pulled out, and then that invisible number that we don't normally, that we don't actually see necessarily, being told to rejoice over the city. Babylon, both as symbolizing civilization and the final wicked city, has judged that righteous people should be murdered. They were tearing the church apart by killing those who were Christians. I mean, that's practically the world we live in today. Other countries, everything but America, for the most part, is killing Christians. ISIS is a good example that we see in the news. That's the only thing we see in the news, and we're starting to not see that anymore because people don't want the glumness of people dying, but they're not talking about it because it convicts them, because people have that kind of conviction to die for their beliefs. We live in a world that nobody will die for anything. They'll change who they are just to stay alive for 5 more minutes. There's a lot that we can deal with here, but the saints, apostles, prophets in particular are those who were martyrs, not only at the end times, but throughout time. So we see that defined here with saints, prophets, martyrs, or apostles. At the end of the chapter, it says the same thing about the blood of the saints, which is in verse 24, as I mentioned. But God's just judgment of Babylon reverses the sentence. In other words, what's happening here is God's judgment of Babylon is being laid out, and it's righteous. It's a righteous judgment. And she receives the penalty that she imposed, because it says there that God has avenged you on her. In other words, God has avenged the martyrs by the destruction of Babylon. Verse 21, then the mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone, threw it into the sea. We're introduced to this third speaker of the chapter. Now, if this is one that we had heard from earlier, I don't know. It appears to be a different one. You heard another voice from heaven. The first thing you hear was an angel. Then you hear another voice. Then you hear this one that just says, then a mighty angel took up a stone, and as they were throwing the stone, said things. John had seen and heard the first speaker, but only heard the second one. And then this mighty angel John sees and hears, but the angel does something before speaking. Grabs the millstone, throws it into the water. And, you know, in chapter 8, verse 5, an angel had hurled a burning censer. Do I need to talk about what a censer is again? Do we remember what a censer is? It's that... the best example I can give of that is if we are, like in the Catholic service, if you see the thing that the priest walks through waving and all of that, like, that would be, I guess, considered a censer, right? Yeah. It's basically, you see that fog that kind of comes out of it, and they're swinging it as they go through. And our parking lot has been awful popular tonight. We've had 2 turnaround in the circle. That's the 4th car to pull in since we started. They just need to come in. Where's the red carpet? But the angel has hurled this burning censer, bowl or fire pan designed to hold live coals and incense, to earth, symbolically beginning the trumpet judgments in chapter 8. We talked about that then. Now this angel has picked up a millstone. A millstone is not light. I mean, think about this. When you hear about a millstone, what do you normally think about? an old-fashioned grist mill with the huge stone that probably weighs 2-3 tons that you turn, that takes everything in you to turn, but you turn it to grind the mill up, or the whatever up, wheat, I don't know, I didn't farm. Corn, there you go, corn. I'm going to have to redo this whole thing. Huh? See, that's what I thought. So, picks up this millstone, which is most likely several hundred pounds, and throws it into the sea like it's nothing. It makes me think about, anybody ever remember watching the World's Strongest Man? When ESPN used to televise those all the time. And you got those great big guys picking up those Atlas stones. Like, that's kind of what I think about. Like, that really big, like, 800-pound stone that they're picking up to put on top of a pedestal. And, or anything Charlie does, probably qualify here. But this guy sounds stronger than you, Charlie. Or are you the mighty angel that we're looking for? But the angel picks up the stone, throws it into the sea, and symbolizes the conclusion of the judgments. So the judgments start with fire being thrown to the earth. The judgment ends with a millstone being thrown to the water. If this millstone's as big as it sounds, it probably makes a pretty big splash. I just like to imagine that it put the fire out. That's all. That being said, I have no proof about that. But it's a nice image. This is how my mind works sometimes when I'm reading, because I like to put visual to it if I can. But the great city of the Antichrist will sink into oblivion as surely as the unsinkable Titanic slipped into nothingness or anything else. And it'll happen as quick as a stone, just like the millstone dropped in the water. If you've ever thrown a huge stone into the water, it doesn't last long for where it's at, right? I mean, it will just drop. The same thing's happening here. And although the ruins of the Titanic were discovered, Babylon will not be. Nor will anybody probably look for it at this point, for the time that the destruction will happen is the end times. Nobody's going to want to go back to that life after seeing all of this, I'm sure. Verses 22 and 23 then start to speak about the sound of harpists. I mean, it goes through all these things saying, these things will no longer be seen or heard in you. Babylon will no longer basically have life, is what it's saying. The completeness of Babylon's destruction is vividly pictured in the cessation of the various activities characteristic of the city in that day. In other words, there's no more music, there's no more laughter, there's no more fun, there's no more this, there's no more that. I mean, just going through the whole list of all these things. I mean, Babylon, if in the sense of Babylon or Rome, as it's most likely related to with the first century church, is the center of artistic and, I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for, or a city to compare. New Orleans might be a good, it's Paris. Some of these cities that we know are different and they're known for the arts that happen there. Like in New Orleans, the jazz music, Mardi Gras, those things. Paris is known for the Louvre, the museums, the history of art. Babylon was known for its art. It was known for the melting together of the cultures, of the things that were happening. Rome would have been the same. It would have been like a center of the arts. In fact, in the world today, America might qualify, because probably most of film and things like that are made here or start here. They may be made in another part of the world, but they start here with, you know, so it could be something like that. But Babylon has been a patron of the arts, and now all secular music will be stopped. anything that is not of God is done. Business will die. No more craftsmen will be found in the city. The pursuits of everyday daily life, such as even grinding flour for bread, will cease. It says the millstones will stop. The nights as well as the days will be without life. You will find nothing. There will be nothing. And in essence, even down to, it mentions the bride and the groom will no longer be seen. In essence, it's saying even the festivities of daily life, the human activities that you may see on a regular basis in these cities, it ceases. It's done. It's over. There's nothing left. And all will stop and there will be nothing left. I mean, no more anything. That even so much as not even the bride and groom will be heard. The light of a lamp will not shine. It's dark. It's gloomy. It's a deserted town. It's a deserted city. It's a desert. It's nothing. It's literally nothing at this point. And Babylon will become a dead city. And that's the implication you get in those two verses. You get to verse 24, and the angel now returns to this third-person description of the fall of Babylon. So there's this implication of you, her, this, that. The conversation here, it's like the angel is talking to Babylon. And then in verse 24, it goes from you to her. Almost indicative that the conversation has now gone from Babylon back to John. That John is hearing this. But the first part of it, the voice is talking specifically to Babylon. And then it's like a transition where the angel then turns back to John and says, "And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth." Kind of like it goes, if you're watching a movie and you have the narrator is the same as the main character, and the main character is in the middle of a conversation, and then the narrator makes a statement to you after the fact. So I don't know how to exactly take that. It does seem like there's a shift back to a third person description of the fall. And as a symbol of civilization, she is judged because she has blood on her hands for the innocent people who have died in her, who have been killed on the earth from Abel onward. Honestly, I think Babylon in Revelation is most likely used for the world as a whole. That is not, you know, the worldly mentality apart from God. Not necessarily a specific city, but all cities. Maybe. All sinners of art. All. And the reason I say that, and I'll go into a little more detail here, but it's talking about the blood of all the innocent, all the martyrs, all of those who have been destroyed. And she is responsible for both the Old and New Testament martyrs, the saints, as well as their spokesmen, the prophets. And John first heard the souls of the martyrs in heaven, what was it, chapter 5 or 6, somewhere back in there. I think 6, where the martyrs are crying from under the throne. And then here we are, and they're told to wait a little longer. Wait until that number is reached. Wait until Babylon is now being punished for the blood of all the martyrs. And the waiting is complete. Divine justice has been fully served. And that is what we've been waiting on. Because chapter 19 then starts a process of where heaven is complete. The judgment is done. The world is destroyed. And all that remains is God and his people. And so that's where we're going to pick up when we get back into this the next time, because it starts out with praising God And chapter 19 is beautiful because one of the first things that is heard by John is hallelujah. It goes through all of this. We get through 18 chapters, and then in chapter 19 we hear a hallelujah that God has completed the task and everything is done. Now, going back just real quickly to the statement I made about that I believe Babylon could be symbolic for something greater than just a singular city. Yes, in the first century they would have taken it possibly as Rome. Yes, Babylon itself was not a city that was known for good against humanity, but evil. Christians and believers throughout the Bible had dealt with that. I mean, Babylon had the Israelites in exile for 40 years, 400 years, something like that. I mean, it seemed like every time you turn around, the Israelites were under somebody else's control. But Babylon to be held responsible for every martyr from Abel on almost lends you to believe that there's something deeper here than just a city. There's something deeper here than just a town or just one group of people. This is indicative that Babylon is used as an example for mankind, all of mankind apart from God, because it is that is persecuting the Christians. Even in America, we experience persecution daily, not the way they do in other parts of the world. We might not be martyred for our faith, but we're going to be laughed at for our faith. We're going to be put down for our faith. There's certain things that are happening in the world, and these are things that are also indicative of the things that Babylon is described as. People that are putting you down, that are living a life that is not holy, going through these certain aspects and playing these games. So I believe that Babylon could actually be an example for mankind as a whole. Babylon would have been the first great city, for the most part, that we would have seen things like this happen. Well, obviously Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, but Babylon would have been the same mentality through this. And the fact that the world is mourning over Babylon's fall. Now, will there be a new city named Babylon when all this takes place? Maybe. But the fact that the world is mourning tells you that it's the hub of the world. For lack of better conversation, and we can talk about this, or I can turn the recording off and then we can talk about this. America could qualify as this Babylon. Because if America were to collapse, the world would mourn. We see that because for how many years we were that central location that everybody... I mean, the stock market for the world is located in New York City. On a smaller scale, could it be New York City? I know that 9/11, 2001, when the World Trade Center was attacked, the world mourned. Not just the city, not just the country, but the world. And I think that could be indicative of what we're going to see here too. A taste. Everybody sure turned back to God for a couple minutes, didn't they? And so we need to be on guard, because when the call comes, if America is that Babylon, when the call comes for God's people to step out, are we willing? Is that call coming now? Is it going to come soon? Are God's people going to be called to step out on faith and away from the evil? Verse 4, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. Am I saying that that's true? No, I can't answer that. Am I saying it's a possibility? Absolutely. Just like any other possibility. We could talk about another city or country. We could talk about another situation and we could probably make it fit. So I'm not sitting here trying to say this is definite. I'm simply saying that we as a church today need to be aware of things like that, that we could be tied into something that could be Babylonian, so to speak. Babylon, when you start to see the world become accepting of lifestyles and of things that are not holy, you start to realize that the city is not necessarily a brick and mortar city. It's not necessarily a city with walls, but the city itself is something that is, it's the idea center. It's where these things start, and the people become accepting, the people become welcoming, the people become enthralled with what the city has to offer. It could even be so much as an idea, but when that idea turns into what it does and then the destruction comes, it's going to go down, and it's going to go down fast, like a millstone thrown into the sea. And when that happens, the only ones that remain will be God's people.